This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. This magical year throws up yet another memorable away win, but our captain has a wobble on his disciplinary tightrope. Loads to talk about on Blue Monday. Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast covering Ipswich Town up or down since 2015. My name is Mikey Pensey-Smith, and joining me for this, the flagship show, the two men who have spent much of their weekend on the wonderful motorways of Great Britain. It is Craig Finbow and Seb Brown. Craig, your journey was the longest. How was it overall?
It was fine, thank you, Mike. Is the A1 a motorway, or the A1M part is the motorway part of it? I don't know. But yeah, it was absolutely fine, mate. It was a lot better than some, it transpires, who had to get the train home, and seems to have taken like a day to get home, some people. But no, it was all right. A1 always is, pretty much, touch wood. I got the added benefit of having the M25 today for a three-hour round trip for a game of football as well. So yeah, I just sort of ticked that one off the list as well this weekend. But no, an absolutely fine journey, which always, a five-hour drive is always a little bit easier in the pouring rain when you've got something positive to talk about.
Absolutely. And Seb, I think this is the longest of your short northern trips, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I've not done it before, so I wanted to tick it off. So yeah, drive up there took about 5 hours on Friday because I was coming from Mid Wales from where I work. But last night was a bit ropey over that M62. You know, the motorway with the house in the middle, that's the tallest motorway in the UK. That was a bit dicey with the winds. But my poor mate I went with, I dropped him at Darlington train station for a train back to London. And I think he got in about 1:45 and then having had to get an Uber from Newark the rest of the way. So I can't complain too much compared to some.
An Uber from where?
Newark.
Yeah, there's loads of trouble last night.
To Newark, and yeah, loads of the trains were just cancelled, so I think they stuck him in an Uber.
Blimey. Thankfully, we won, though, hey? Spoiler alert. This is a live show, so please do get your questions in the chat. We'll try and involve you all as much as possible. Let's get into Saturday's game, though, straight off the bat, shall we? And no real surprises in the Ipswich lineup, Craig.
No, as the guys spoke about pre-match, Taylor coming in for Luongo, and that's all she wrote, really. Yeah, we weren't missing Williams; he wasn't starting in any case, so Clark carried on there, and everyone else is just picking itself at the moment. So I think, you know, there was possibly a little bit of a question whether some people were questioning whether Ball might come in for Taylor to give us a little bit more solidity in the middle of midfield, but Taylor's more than earned his chance, and his he may well be needed a little bit more in the next few weeks. But no, he came in and he did absolutely brilliantly.
Yeah, so it was just to recap, Plaidke in goal, back four of Clark, Wolfen and Burgess Davis, Morsey and Taylor in midfield, Burns off the right, and then it was Chaplin through the middle, Broadhead on the left and Hurst in the centre forward role. And this is the Middlesbrough team, Seb. I think you said that Johnny Howson was going to be playing
fullback, didn't he?
Yeah, that's what we were expecting. So, yeah, Dale Fry obviously passed the late fitness test. I think he was the one of the nine who made it. They're 10 out. Nine didn't make it. He did. And I think the consensus was pre-match that if he didn't make it, then Howson would have to go at right back and Vandenberg would have to stay in his normal role in the centre. So him being there allowed Howson to play in centre mid with Barlaser, which then freed up Matt Crooks to play in the 10 with the two wingers either side of him. So having Fry back did kind of help them solve sort of three issues along the in their lineup, but still missing, yeah, nine of the players didn't make it in the end.
Probably a good time to play Middlesbrough. I saw the first part of the first half compared to a chess match by Stuart Watson with limited chances for either team. Clark got forward well and slipped in Burns, who held it up and laid it off for Hurst, but his shot was blocked and looped into the hands of the goalkeeper. Then an aggressive bit of defending from Wolfie in the Borough half enables Chaplin, lovely chess to the path of Broadhead, whose shot is heavily deflected. That easily could have looped into the net. Ladke then has his viral moment with one of the sexiest pieces of goalkeeping you're ever likely to see, Craig.
Yeah, it was. And the thing is, when he did it, it wasn't unexpected and there were no nerves or anything like that. But yeah, just to quickly go back on the first part of the match, Morsy absolutely clattered Rogers in the first minute and a half of the match. And you're looking it back, I watched it back just now on the full match replay. It's a proper nasty tackle as well. He did well not to get at least a yellow for that one. But I when I was walking to the ground from the centre yesterday, I bumped into a Borough fan who just like started chatting, saw my blue scarf, just started chatting to me, and we were just shooting the breeze. And he was saying that they're trying to play football out of the back, but they're not good enough to do it. And he said, you listen to the crowd, they will be on their backs. As soon as they try and do it once, the nerves will start and the crowd will start getting on top of them. And that happened in the first 5 minutes. We pressed them quite high up. And as you rightly say, Mikey, it was a bit of a chess match. Not a particularly good chess match either. A very low quality chess match as it goes. One of the sort of chess match I'd probably play, try and turn it into a game of drafts. But both like centre-halves had a lot of the ball, didn't they, Seb? And Borough weren't really interested in pressing us at all. They just sat back and sat in their block. Whereas we had a little bit more about us in trying to press them. And I say we did do in the first 5 minutes. And even then, the crowd were starting to get a bit edgy and on their backs. But yeah, that Hladke cushion, his starting position all match is just so high. It's like playing with 11 outfield players. He's playing as a sweeper. He really is. When we're on the attack, he's pretty much on the halfway line. And even when teams break on us, as we saw in this clip, he's taken it down, 35 yards away from his goal. And as I say, no one around me was particularly bothered. They knew exactly what he was going to do. I thought he was just going to trap it dead to his foot rather than cushion it to someone else. I thought, oh yeah, he's going to just bring this down on his instep. It was just a beautiful, beautiful piece of skill, and you say completely unexpected, not unexpected. And I'd wager he's got a better touch than some of our more agricultural outfield players. Bless him. He's playing on such a crest of a wave of confidence at the moment, isn't he? It's just an absolute delight to see.
Yeah, it's been brilliant, his arc this season, hasn't it? Real pleasure to watch. Seb, speaking of a pleasure to watch, Connor Chaplin gets involved at the right end of the pitch in the 33rd minute. Talk us through goal number one.
Yeah, so we started to sort of, like Craig said, it was two sides feeling each other out, and kind of they were happy for us to kind of put our foot on the ball up to halfway, and they were kind of saying, break us down. They didn't really have any kind of attacking intent, and the goal starts, it's Wolfenden who kind of steps out. They try a through ball through. Wolfenden kind of steps out and collects it and finds Taylor in midfield. Taylor played really well yesterday. He finds Chaplin, who just gets his head down and drives. And it was one of the first times in the game we'd moved the ball with real kind of pace. Up until then, the chess match analogy was pretty accurate. It was kind of patient in the build-up, but this time we really looked to hit them quickly. He finds Burns out on the wing, who just drives in field. We get a bit of luck. We get two strokes of luck, don't we? The cross comes off Howson, hits him on the chest slash arm. Fourth Chaplin is in the right place, and it's so instinctive by Chaplin, isn't it? Just to hit it that first time, left foot on the volley. And again, secondary bit of luck. It clips Matt Clark's head and flies past Senny Diang. But yeah, I think at that point, we fully deserved the goal because we'd really started positively. We were nullifying Borough. They weren't offering very much up front at all. And it was a moment of quality after 30 minutes, Craig, I'd say, of not much happening at all. Nothing really happened. I don't know, the Broad had one looped over, but apart from that, it was you know, no shots on target really from either side, and it was the first real quality move of the game that was rewarded with a goal. Excellent from Wolfenden to kind of step up and intercept the ball. Good run from Taylor. Brilliant from Chaplin. The instinctive hit was excellent, and you need that bit of luck sometimes, and we got that twice, and fully deserved the goal at that point.
Yeah, it didn't look like two teams really feeling each other out. It looked like two teams who we know are going to set up quite similarly, just negating each other, really. I say, to my eyes, the only difference was that we were more aggressive in the press, whereas they were just, say, more than happy to let predominantly Wolfenden, wasn't it? He was stood on the ball for an awful lot of that first, as Sib says, 20 minutes, half an hour, just trying to find a space and an opening and a player to pass it to. So, it wasn't the most spectacular first 30 minutes. It just needed a spark, didn't it, to sort of set the game off.
And Middlesbrough fans are absolutely frothing at the mouth. Latte Laff tries to find an equaliser, cuts in and curls the ball wide. Dangerous one, that. But we get in at 1-0. Just what the doctor ordered, Craig.
Yeah, absolutely. That Latte Laff shot was a bit similar to the Broadhead chance from last week, in that, you know, you expected him to at least hit the target, and thankfully, with the sort of goal gaping, he dragged it wide. And what was notable a couple of times in that half was, I'm going to keep calling him Whittaker, Rogers broke a few times with the ball, and you could see Morsey was tempted just to clip his heels or pull him back or just to stop the attack, but didn't. You know, he's well disciplined, Sam Morsey. He's not going to get a yellow card for nothing, you know. But it was quite, to my eyes again, it just seemed obvious that he was just stepping back off the gas a little bit, and there were opportunities for him to do it, which he didn't take up.
And after half time comes arguably Middlesbrough's best period of the game. Latke tips over a dangerous in swinging corner, then makes a solid save from a Latte Laff header. Maybe milked that one a little bit. Murray Hutchinson comes on for... What are you shaking your head for, Craig? Murray Hutchinson comes on for Nathan Broadhead. What position did he pick up, Seb, when he came on? Because obviously Burns is still on the pitch. We don't often see those two on the pitch at the same time.
Yeah, it was a straight swap. He went into the left-hand role that Broadhead had been occupying. Broadhead was kind of coming in field quite a lot in the first half, looking to make things happen, kind of picking the ball up and running. And I guess that was Hutchinson's brief as well. You know, Burns can stay out on the right, get the more direct role, and kind of take the fullback on. And Hutchinson had that freer role, I guess, to kind of drift in field if he needed to. Davis was quite quiet in the first half, I thought. The guy I was with, my mate Chris, mentioned that obviously without Luongo there, sometimes Luongo naturally drifts into that left-hand channel, doesn't he? And involves the likes of Broadhead and Davis more. So maybe his absence contributed a little bit towards that. But Hutchinson just came on into the same role. And yeah, they started the second half stronger. They had the couple of corners, like he tipped one over underneath his own crossbar, the good save that he pushed away from the danger zone that Taylor managed to clear. And Hutchinson just, yeah, at the right times, I think the subs were made because, you know, Broadhead, we've discussed him recently, haven't we? Has he been slightly off it? I thought he was okay in the first half, but maybe he was starting to tire as the clock was wearing on. We needed that impetus, I thought, of fresh legs at the time, just to try and counteract the decent start they had made to the second half.
And it didn't take Hutchinson long to make an impact, did it, Craig, down that left channel?
No, absolutely not. And this was another piece of play which stemmed similarly to what I was talking about just now about Wolfenden having the ball and looking to find people's feet. And he tried it a few times with Hurst in the first half, maybe three or four times with Hurst in the first half. And Hurst's touch hadn't quite got up to scratch, really. And he grew into the game very similar to Jack Taylor, in my eyes, is that they started off quite slowly, but then really ramped up performance as the game went on. And obviously, if you're George Hurst and you've got a defender on your back and you're sprinting to the defender who's passing you the ball, it's a hell of a skill to be controlling that dead or spinning or whatever it happened to be. So as I say, yeah, we tried it a few times. The ball's pinged into Hurst's feet, who's running with Clark on his back towards our own goal. And this is a good touch. He spins Clark. I think he's looking to spin and go on your goal himself. As it transpires, Chaplin, as ever, is not a million miles away from George Hurst, so picks up on that pass. Picks up on the ball, sorry, and hits it first time into the left inside left channel, where Hutchinson's already started his run. So if you watch it on the replay, Hutchinson starts his run pretty much as Hurst touches the ball. So he's already got a head start on their right back, who's on the halfway line, whereas their other centre half is about 6 yards further back, and their left back's another 4 yards further back. So their back four's all over the place.
It looks offside on first watch, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The speed that Hutchinson was moving at.
Yeah, that's right. But say, thankfully, their back four, whether it's by virtue of Hurst's run into his own half, in effect, sort of just disrupts their back four. But if you sort of freeze frame it at the point where Chaplin plays the pass, just to double check it is offside, it's like a bit of corrugated iron, their back four, mm-hmm. basically. Hutchinson's in the clear through on goal and pretty effortlessly slides it past Jiang. And it's quite funny, actually, if people listen to, I think it was the Town TV interview, forgive me if it wasn't, I think it was on YouTube, the official Town interview with McKenna after the match, when he talks about it and he refers back to the pre-season games over in Germany and him having a similar chance or opportunity and deciding to cut back and try and cut back three or four times before getting the shot off. Well, it's something else that that he's learned. And it wasn't just that. He was also getting stuck in against Seb, wasn't he, Hutchinson? He was getting his body in the way. He was tracking back. He was winning fouls. He was conceding fouls. Yeah, he's that part of his game, he's learned so very, very quickly from that, the kid we saw start the season falling over at the faintest touch with his arms up in the air wanting a foul. He's now getting stuck in and really growing into proper men's football.
He's so good without the ball, isn't he? When he's not in possession, the stuff he'll do off the ball is superb. I thought he was excellent when he came on, fully deserved the goal, because like you say, it wasn't just the finish, it was his all-round game that was brilliant at a time. I think we probably needed it a bit of freshening up. Did you hear the whistle, Craig? I didn't hear it at the time, but on the replay I've watched today, there's like a 10-minute EFL highlights game. I can hear it on there, but in the stadium, I didn't hear a whistle, did you?
No, well, apparently people could hear it on the telly. People, international viewers who are watching it on the telly could hear it. But myself and Oscar, we were right in the corner. We were pretty much on the corner of the stand looking at the corner flag and towards the dugout. So we were quite a way away from where the whistle emanated from. So no, I hadn't heard it. I hadn't really noticed that Hutchinson had sort of checked himself. He was, looked to my eyes, he was pretty straight through and gliding through on goal and just sliding it past the keeper.
Such was the atmosphere in that away end. He just didn't even hear the whistle, Craig, maybe. Harness and Jackson come on for Burns and Chaplin on 76. So we do two lots of two subs. 10 minutes later, Ladapo and Ball are on for Taylor and Hurst. Seb, why didn't he take off Sam Morsey?
Yeah, we had that debate with the people kind of standing around me, saw Ball getting ready to come on, and I thought, I maybe just wonder, must just go back quickly, that the shot that Taylor had was a great effort as well, the one that went narrowly over. So it was a mistake from them playing out from the back. I think it was Fry passes it straight to Davis, who kind of bursts forwards, and I thought he was going to get his first goal of the season. He hits it and it's a decent block. I think it was Clark, and then Clark is then dallying on the ball, and Davis nips in again and wins it back. And a bit fortunate, Clark sticks out a leg, and Davis probably could have gone down. He probably would have got a penalty there. And then it works its way to Harness, who kind of cushions the layoff, and it was a great effort from Taylor just over the bar. If that had gone in, that would have been limbs, as the kids say, in the away end. So Taylor, like Craig said, grew into the game, did really well. But I thought Ball might well come on for Morsey. As Craig said, he absolutely clattered Morgan Rogers 90 seconds into the game. Probably should have been a booking. 10 minutes later, it's definitely at least a yellow. And yeah, put Ball on, see out the game. Ball was combative when he came on. He put himself about. He put in a challenge on Matt Crooks that Crooks didn't like at all and got himself booked. And with hindsight, yeah, that should have been the change that we made. But he's not going to take his captain off. It's his game, isn't it? Me and Rich were discussing it in the pre-match show. And I think we said, if he does get booked, do you rest him for Watford? And we said, you can't take that chance. When the suspension happens, it will happen. We'll have to deal with it at the time. And yeah, bit of hindsight, Ball for Morsey is the obvious change. And he plays with a bit more freedom on Tuesday night, but it's happened and we have to deal with it.
But of all the things to get booked for, if you're Sam Morsey, to kick the ball away 40 seconds from the end of the match when you're 2-0 up, it's just weird. And I always laugh about it with the guys that I sit with. It's just ingrained in footballers, isn't it? Kicking the ball away. It's just ingrained in the, just little nudge just to delay the game. But in that situation, at that point of the game, it's just crazy, just complete brain fart.
Was it 40 seconds before the whistle?
Yeah. I appreciate that there's not an awful lot of time between the referee blowing the whistle and him doing it. You know, it's not as if the referee's blowing the whistle, he's had to think about it, and he's lumped it into the corner of the pitch. It's quite quickly after the referee's blown his whistle, but it's still intent, I think, to do it.
But given that one in the first 90 seconds, he can't really have any complaints with getting a booking in the game. There was a handball in the second half, if I remember rightly, as well, which I thought he might have got booked for as well. So across the game, it was, the silly one to take, but he probably can't have many arguments about getting the caution because that Rodgers challenge wasn't great after 90 seconds.
No. So about 1,420 levels below the Championship is the Sunday League that I play in. And our goalkeeper was Books a few weeks ago. We conceded a penalty in the last kick of the game, but we were winning 3-1. Opposition player scores the penalty and our goalkeeper has gone to drop kick the ball back to the centre circle so we could just restart the game and finish it. And he shanked it so badly that the ref has turned round, didn't see him kick it and just assumed that he's tried to kick it off the side of the pitch and booked him for it in the last action of the game.
He's not the next Vaclav Hlaki then, Mikey, by the sounds of it, no?
He's not bad with his feet, but yeah, it was more more Andy Marshall than Vaclav Hlaki in terms of that particular kick. but yeah, it sounded like it was a pretty controlled performance when you were heading up to the Riverside, when you set off at what, 2:30 a.m. or whatever it was, Craig, you'd have definitely have taken the result, but also this really controlled, disciplined performance, disciplined aside from the Sam Morsy yellow card, which we'll probably speak more about.
Yeah, 100%. I actually left Friday afternoon and stayed at the Premier Inn in Pontefract on the A1, just so I had a little bit of glamour into the weekend. but yes,
Partridge.
It was exactly that, Mikey. It was solid and it was controlled and controlling. It was similar to like the second halves we had against Millwall and Coventry, in that once we were ahead in the game, we just sort of nullified, saw the game out, snuffed out the majority of the opposition's chances. And McKenna said about it, the fact that we had that sort of box in the middle of our midfield just to sort of nullify Middlesbrough's strengths. As Seb said a little earlier about Davis not getting forward, Clark didn't really get forward as well. So you would assume that was an intention rather than just it happening, is that we were probably a little bit, as we have been in away games, to be fair, haven't we? We're not looking to go gung-ho and outscore the opposition in away games. And as, again, the guys said on their pre-match, Middlesbrough don't score an awful lot of goals at home. Especially if you take away the anomaly of the 4-0, was it Preston? I think you guys said pre-match. Crikey, they score less than a goal a game. And so, yeah, again, harking back to my friend I bumped into who I'd never seen before, who told me all about Middlesbrough. He said, he pretty much called the game, this Middlesbrough fan, as we were walking to it. He said, Matt Crooks. I said, God, bloody Matt Crooks. Always plays well against us. Always seems to score. He's a bit of a marauder in that number 10. He goes, he's been rubbish this year so far. You know, he's flat to see. He hasn't done anything. I saw him. He was called the tree by one of the Borough fans I saw on one of their match reports. So yeah, he got that spot on. He got spot on about them trying to play out from the back and being, if they're put under pressure, the crowd will start to turn. And you know, what few fans that were left on 80 minutes, they all seemed to think it was an 80 minute match yesterday. The Borough fans, the majority had gone by the time the clock had ticked over to 80. But yes, because I think they could see that we were just seeing the game out as we've tended to do the last two or three matches once we've been ahead.
Did it surprise you how much control we had, Seb, considering how well Carrick and McKenna know each other?
I guess it shouldn't do after what we saw last season. Obviously, this is a completely different level above, and it really reminded me of some of those away games last year where we're incredibly professional, we're incredibly well-coached and well-disciplined, and like Craig said, we just completely nullify teams, don't we? They hadn't scored that many at the Riverside, but equally, they only conceded 7, I think, before yesterday, so they don't concede many goals, and yeah, we completely counteracted everything they had. Me and Rich were debating on the pre-match show, will the two sides cancel each other out, given the very similar playing styles, or will it be a basketball kind of end-to-end sort of, you know, a 4-3 game, for example, two sides that aren't great at the back but are good going forward, and in the end, it was kind of neither. It was just a professional performance by us in complete control. I was surprised at their lack of attacking intent in the first half. Okay, they've got a lot of injuries. I guess that's the caveat, isn't it? But you know, there were boos in the Middlesbrough end at half time. And I think they were a bit surprised at the lack of options going forward as well. So the more I think about it, I think it's a real statement victory, you know, to go up there. And I'm sure, judging from Twitter, Leeds fans were fairly sure we'd be dropping some points this weekend, and yet another roadblock in our way has been kind of swatted away or swatted aside with minimal fuss. It was a lot of hallbacks to last season. I remember going to Bolton in February, March time, I think it was, and we'd beaten the sides we should have beaten, like Forest Green and Morecambe and stuff, I think, around the time. And that was the first kind of time I saw them. I thought, okay, well, if this is decent now. You know, we're not just doing it against the sides we should be beating. We're now going to the stronger sides in the division and kind of really setting down a marker. And the more I reflect on it today, I think it's a really impressive statement win, because, you know, our record there is crap. We've not won there since 2010. Okay, they've got injuries, but they're still a decent side with a bright young coach. He averaged 2 points per game for pretty much two thirds of last season. So it was a real test. I probably would have taken a point at breakfast when I'm sitting around the table before I headed off to the ground on Saturday morning. But we did what we do, you know, complete control, complete professionalism, strike when we need to strike. And yeah, a really impressive statement win at the start of a very big week for us.
Notice neither of you have said the words smash and grab.
Did you see that? That's ridiculous.
Neil Wilmore's brought that up. So that was the headline on the Middlesbrough official club website. Ipswich smash and grab win. Saw that Streaky 94 has also brought that up, the smash and grab. Not sure you can really call it that. Even if you're just looking at the statistics of the game, it was like we slightly edged them in pretty much every department. I think maybe they had 1% more possession or something like that.
Yeah,
but absolutely. It put the stats in the article, didn't it? Underneath the headline were the stats. So, yeah, really strange choice of match report.
Yeah, Aaron S. also is complete control. I thought it was a smash and grab. Everyone's loving that. Everyone's loving that one. Let's take a look at the other results. Let me just bring them up here. So Coventry 2-0 win in that Midlands derby on Friday night. That probably surprised absolutely nobody. And then Leeds went to Blackburn with about, what was it, 15,000 away fans behind the goal and 20,000 further up the road who couldn't get in. Yeah, very professional job from them as well, away at Blackburn. West Brom lost at Sunderland. Is it managerless Sunderland? Cardiff 1-0 win over Millwall. Huddersfield 1, Bristol City 1. Leicester eased to a 4-0 win over Plymouth. Norwich held by Preston, 0-0. Not much to say about that one. QPR keep winning, and so does Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield Wednesday won 1-0 at Stoke City, and it cost Alex Neil his job. And Tuesday night's opponents, Watford, did us a favour with an injury time equaliser at home to Southampton. The only one of our automatic promotion rivals to drop points were the Saints, which means that the table now looks like this. We're still right up there. 20 games played, 48 points. Leeds 7 points behind us. And now it's 10 points between us and Southampton in fourth. And quite a big gap on West Brom and the rest. Middlesbrough down 3 points off sixth place. It's really, really tight between the last playoff place and then basically half the division, isn't it? Do you see Middlesbrough being up there potentially in the playoffs at the end of the year, Craig, or does a lot need to change between now and then? Based on what you saw.
Yeah, as I say, you know, that you can see how they're set up similarly to us. But obviously, we'd struggle if we had 7, 8, 9 players out as well, wouldn't we? So I think, hopefully, once they get their players back and they start click into gear, they can start taking some points off of teams that are around us by feathering their own nest, as the saying goes, from a recent pod. But what's quite interesting is there's quite a lot of mistakes, wasn't there, in the goals. I watched the highlights last night when I got in, actually, because I'm that dedicated to football and I just love football. And there's just loads of defensive errors and people trying to play out from the back, aren't there? There seems to be quite a proliferation of...
Everyone's trying to be Ipswich Town, aren't they, Craig?
There's certainly a lot more team. We were talking, so my mate Glenn talks about it. Since us getting relegated, and coming back up again, that teams have gone from predominantly being a long ball sort of division to being now everyone seems to be trying to play football, don't they, in the main, and to varying degrees of success.
Do you think like the behind closed doors football just enabled more clubs to just give it a go because of the lack of home fans? Is that a theory, or do you think it's just the evolution of football a little bit because Pep's been doing it for the best part of a decade now in the Premier League?
Yeah, and possibly that, and possibly because of the type of manager and coach that is coming more and more into the game, aren't they? You know, as we know, to our own benefit, the younger career coach, educated, what like their players to play in a certain way. They're more to the fore now than the more agricultural, rudimentary type coaches, aren't they? So, but by virtue of that, it's going to be more football being played. Whether the players are good enough to do it's another matter.
It's all over for your generation now, isn't it, Craig? Okay. Let's hear from our sponsors. Although I don't think Craig wants to hear from that guy either, reading it out, but here we go.
Innovation Labs is business hub and co-working space with strategic locations across Suffolk. Our aim is to foster innovation, entrepreneurship, business growth, and the development of an AI centre of excellence in Suffolk. Monthly hot desks are available from just £79. For more info, head to innovationlabsgroup.com or contact info@innovationlabsgroup.com. Innovation Labs, providing support for businesses across Suffolk. Locations in Stowmarket, Ipswich, Sudbury, Woodbridge, with more to follow.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Lovely. Have you calmed down now, Craig?
That's very professional. That I don't know how you manage to do that each week off the cuff without a script and hit the spot, hit the music every time. It's very, very good.
Thank you. Eric Hitchmo, did anyone happen to catch the brand of cigar Ladke was smoking on the halfway line when he made that cushion pass? Must get some for Christmas.
I think if the club will be missing a trick if they don't bring out the Hladky cushion just in time for Christmas. They could, I'm sure they could do brand something along those lines.
Lovely, maybe one for the Blue Monday merch store, Craig. That horse hollerer. I'm starting to think Hladky is our most important player. He's unbelievable with his hands and feet.
Yeah, well, I don't think whether he's most important. He's certainly becoming one of the most integral to the way that we play, isn't he? Because as I said before, he's now our sweeper, our de facto sweeper. We've now pretty much got 11 outfield players on the pitch. It just allows everyone to play further up the pitch, but also, you know, allows us to start, as he's done numerous times before, to start attacks from pretty much on our own goal line as well.
Bumpkin says Millwall, Coventry, Middlesbrough, 3 cracking results. No blip here. It's been impressive the way we've bounced back from that West Brom game, sir.
It has, yeah. Obviously, West Brom was the first one after the break, and you know, given the fixtures that were coming up in December, that defeat kind of, as we said at the time, if we follow up with wins against the likes of Millwall and Coventry, there was no issue, and we've just carried it on. And yeah, it's another one down, and we go into a big week now with the two away games. But you give yourself that breathing space, don't you? Win the Saturday, the weekend game at the start of a 3-week game, and suddenly everything gets a little bit easier. You know, Watford isn't a free hit now. Norwich certainly isn't a free hit. But even if we lose one and only win the other, you're still averaging, you know, 2 points per game across a three game week. So yeah, they've done the hard work now with the great start, and hopefully they'll carry it on. And it's great to see, because after the last couple of international breaks, there were a few mutterings, weren't there? Did we look a little bit leggy, and were things starting to, you know, catch up with us a little bit? And I guess some people were maybe expecting us to start to drop off, but we've just, you know, picked up kind of what we were doing earlier in the season, where the performances are controlled. We've cut out this horrible habit of conceding a goal in the first 10 minutes of a match. And yeah, things are certainly on the up again.
Let's talk about Watford away coming up on Tuesday night, Craig. We're both going to be there in the away end. Mark Lander, do you think Axel in for Wolfie on Tuesday? Watched the game yesterday. I think Wolfie doesn't always cover Harry Clark when he pushes forward.
Yeah, possibly will be a couple of changes. I think I'd probably keep Burgess in there. Who's the lump that plays for Watford? Rajovic, is it? He's a big old unit, isn't he? So Rajovic. So we may keep Burgess in there for that reason. And as we've seen, when there has been rotation, it does tend to be Wolfenden that just steps out for the game for Twanzabi to come in. And you know, it'll be to our own. As we've seen, you know, they're handling it pretty perfectly at the moment in terms of drip feeding him in and taking him out and just getting him up to speed, getting him enough minutes for what will be a pretty important January when Burgess goes. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see that change. And possibly Broadhead as well. As Seb said before about yesterday, Broadhead was, again, he was okay, wasn't he, Seb? I'm still erring on David Diamond's side of things when it comes to Broadhead at the moment. He's not really setting the world alight. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's another change come Tuesday.
Yeah, I think you rest him and then get him back in for the Norwich game, don't you? He's he's much better at Portman Road at the moment than he is away from home. So Hutchinson deserves a start for the off the ball stuff and for the goal. And I guess maybe Luongo comes back in for Taylor. Taylor, I thought was good yesterday. Like you say, he grew into the game and did well. I just wonder, physical side, away from home, slightly tricky. Do you want that sort of, you know, Luongo and Morsi's kind of understanding back in there before the Norwich game? Potentially, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, or possibly you give Taylor another one on the understanding that he missed out in the Norwich one, and you give Luongo an extra day's rest. But, you know, no match day during the week, and get him properly up for Saturday. Who knows?
There were a couple of limpings yesterday, weren't there? Clark was limping towards the end of the first half. Burns took a knock, so I wouldn't be surprised if we did see a little bit of rotation for the midweek game, and then look to go back to the traditional kind of full strength side for next weekend.
Yeah, we got Williams, haven't you, who's back after his ban. They're pretty seamless, thankfully. You know, they're pretty seamless changes, regardless who drops in or out at the moment. Hopefully when Morsi gets his suspension, it'll be an equally seamless transition.
Yeah, there was a comment here from Neil Johnson. Clark has been superb the last three games. Do you think he keeps his place even when Williams is back, Craig?
No, I don't think so. I still think Williams is the better player. But I just think there's an understanding that players will just be fed in and fed out. And it's not really a knock on their performance as such. It's the fact that we're just trying to keep everyone fit and at a level that they're going to be good for the rest of the season, if you see what I mean. We're not going to be slogging everyone 90 minutes, 98 minutes, wherever it happens to be, every single match for a three-day week if we have got the potential to rest people and bring people in to give people rest. So I just say I think that's the way they look at things. I think that's the understanding that the players have got, is that they're not being dropped because they've been rubbish. They're not being dropped because their performances are dropped. They're being dropped to save themselves, and they know that their replacements are equally of an equal level, and it's for the benefit of the team for the long haul come May.
Indeed. Just a few comments on the change of management style in the Championship. Just dipping back into that, Rich says there's an evolution of managers losing their jobs and who's replacing them. Who's the Watford manager at the moment, Seb?
I can never pronounce his name properly. Ishmael, isn't it? Vil something Ishmael. So yeah, he's got them going, hasn't he? I think they've only lost one in 10 now. So this is perhaps a trickier tie than it was. And that defeat was Leicester, if I remember rightly. So it's probably a trickier tie than it would have been maybe a few weeks ago. I think, top of my head, I think they've scored second highest home goals after us, maybe, or maybe from open play or something. So they do score goals at home, so it will be a tricky game on Tuesday night. But like I said, you've done the hard work on Saturday. It's certainly not a free hit, but you've put yourself in a great position now where even if you only take a point going into the Norwich game, you know, you're on the 4 points for the two games with a home game with a sellout crowd, everybody ridiculously up for it, the coach being welcomed. Everything is going to be kind of really, really on fire around that fixture. So if you can get yourself a solid point, then you're laughing.
Don't Leeds have Sunderland away?
They do. They do. Yeah. It's the 8 o'clock game, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Tricky. Ashley Anton was hanging out with a few Middlesbrough fans after the game. Seemed like a very friendly bunch by all accounts. And they said we're better than Leicester were. I guess that's just one game in isolation, but really pleasing to hear that sort of thing from opposition supporters, isn't it?
Let's hope that we're better than them on Boxing Day.
Yeah. Carnivore Nation, how many points from the next five games is a good return? For me, anything more than 9 would be exceptional. We keep doing these predictions, don't we? And I mean, I expected us to, I think I had us down to lose the Middlesbrough game when I did my predictions.
When we did our 10 game, when we did it, was it West Brom to New Year's Day, wasn't it? Mm. I had West Brom away, Middlesbrough away and Leeds away down for defeats. And yeah, I think I need to start being a bit more positive after seeing that yesterday. I've been hanging around Rich too long. It's the negativity
he's watching,
on the game has worn off on me.
And he's typing. I can see he's typing as we speak.
Yeah, I'll be getting a reprimand.
I suppose it's how those points are spaced out over which games, aren't they, as well? Because you don't really want to be losing against Leeds. If you can get a point against Leeds, then and a point against Leicester potentially, then the rest of them can sort of work themselves out. If you see what I mean? You don't want to be giving Leeds that 3 points.
Are we in agreement that a Morsy yellow against Watford and therefore missing, I guess we want him for Leeds, don't we? Is it better to miss Norwich and Leeds or Leeds and Leicester? What's your views on it?
Oh, yeah. I really want him there for that Norwich game.
Yeah, so I'm not that bothered about him there for Norwich game. I think we can handle
lesser,
Norwich.
Yeah, I'm the same. That's the lesser of the three for me.
Cool. I don't want to think about Norwich yet anyway. Let's think about Watford.
back on that tightrope.
Yeah, we were talking about it in the car on the way back, and exactly the same as everyone else is thinking. Christ, which two would it be preferable to miss? Well, obviously QPR and Stoke will be the two that would be preferable to miss. But can you really see Sam Morsy playing a game against Norwich, Leeds, and Leicester, and not picking up Norwich and Leeds as it will be, and not picking up a yellow to miss any of them?
Because we're going to need him to be making fouls, aren't we? Especially against Leeds. Can you remember the game at Portman Road? How many niggly little fouls he did? A lot of the time, it's just with his hands, isn't it? He's just like grabbing people as they go past him. It's not always smashing people like he did in the first minute at Middlesbrough. Bumpkins touted Williams to channel his inner Tirico for the Norwich game. It's a tough one, that, isn't it? Because you feel like that's a game that Harry Clarke is going to be bang up for as well. Only one of them is going to get to play.
I think I'd be tempted to keep Clarke in position personally. I know the previous question said he'd been superb. I'm not sure I agree with the term superb, but he's noticeably upped his game. He looks stronger, he looks fitter, he looks quicker than he has done in previous months of the season. And yeah, I think for me, his is the shirt to lose at the moment. Williams hasn't played a lot of football at the moment, and I've always got that slight worry with Williams that he might just two-foot Hernandez in the first minute and then we've got a real situation on our hands. So I'm not sure. I think for now I'd keep in Clarke. He'll be bang up for it, obviously being a local lad, and I just think maybe he's got that better control and better self-discipline than Williams. Potentially, I think Williams is the better footballer.
I don't think there's not much in it, is there?
there's not much in it, but I'd come down on his side, I think, more than Williams. Like, you know, Williams, that one he did against, was it Preston when he did somebody and was laughing at them on the touchline. And then the one he did at the home game last time out, he has that in him. And I worry that a big game with a big crowd, that giving the ref a decision to make, might well go against him. Because if he does it, the Norwich fans will be all over him. The fans are going to boo him. The players are going to be all over him. So I would just maybe worry about that self-control and that discipline a little bit with Williams more than Clark.
Yeah, from a football standpoint, Michael Warner says he thinks Williams covers the back post better than Clark. Clark is more of a ball watcher. I can see Craig nodding along there.
Yeah, potentially. But then, as Sib says, in a one-on-one, when you've got someone running at you, you'd have Danasian over the other two of them, wouldn't you?
Oh, that's the answer. Yeah, he'll play Danasian. Probably. Yeah.
Williams has got the tendency to go flying in and try and take someone out. Clark's got the tendency to let someone drift past them. But, you know, they've both obviously got their positives going forwards. So I'll tell you what, why don't we leave the decision up to Kieran McKenna and see what he does?
Yeah,
I'm sure he'll make the correct one.
Alex Corbett says he would have taken 2 points from these two away games. So anything from Watford is a bonus. I guess if we're going to pinpoint a game to lose, if we had to lose any of the next three or four games, probably would be this Watford one, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking actually about would you take 3 points in these three games? I think, well, you don't want to lose to Norwich. You'd probably take a point. You'd certainly take a point away at Watford and probably away at Middlesbrough. But now we've got those 3 points now. So as Seb said, you know, let's just look to build on it and look to build on it again.
Absolutely right. Thanks for these comments, guys. Keep getting the questions in if you can. Reading Trent says, got a feel that George Hurst must be exhausted as we have no real cover. He's starting to play more in games. Seb, is that a good sign? Because he's now trusted enough, his fitness is trusted for him to be able to get through 85, 87 minutes of running his socks off? Or is it a slight concern for you that he's having to play so much football when we don't really have any other options up there for now? Options on that level?
Yeah, nothing gives us the same dynamic and dimensions that he does. You know, at the start of the season, he was doing 65, 70, and it would be Ladapo, or in the latter kind of weeks, it was Scarlett for a prolonged period of time. But now he's consistently on past the 80th minute. He always looks done by kind of 70, 75. The work rate he puts in is absolutely insane, isn't it? But we kind of have no choice, because you do get that drop off when he's not involved. I guess January's not too far away now. If he's fully fit, can you see him starting every game up until January? Probably, because he's so important to the way we play with the three behind him. He's crucial in that kind of, you know, tiring out defenders, running the channels a little bit, holding the ball up, getting others involved. And we simply don't have that at the moment. Last year, we were pretty quick in January, weren't we? Was it the FA Cup game where Hurst and Broadhead were pictured? So that must have been the first weekend of January. So we moved quickly last year to get reinforcements in, and maybe we'll be looking to do the same this year. And he's just got another, five, six games to go, absolutely flogging himself into the ground. And then he can have a bit of a respite with the Wimbledon away game. And by then, there might be a more quality understudy to come in for him who can kind of alleviate some of the work rate he's having to put in around the 70, 75 minute mark.
Romeo said there in the chat, Mikey, that he's the hardest player to replace right now. And he is, isn't it? Of looking through the squad and potential replacements, as we were saying earlier about people potentially seamlessly being able to come in and replace each other. You haven't got anybody in that squad that can do the same job that Hurst is currently doing. As Seb says, the work rate is just ridiculous. Yesterday, he took on both their centre-halves, didn't he, Seb? He took on Fry and Clark, and he won the battle against two of them.
Yeah. They were big as well. They were physical. You know, Clark's a big boy, and he dominated them both.
Yeah, and to your initial point, Mikey, and I think it's unfortunate that he's having to play. I don't think it's through him doing so well that he's deserving to stay on the pitch. I think it's unfortunate that we don't have an adequate replacement on the subs bench at the moment that we can, not use the word trust, but you know what I mean, that we'd like to have on the pitch for what could be 20, 25 minutes at the end of a game, because the drop-off is currently so stark. And it's probably the reason why there were the rumours about the American guy during the week, weren't there, who looked very similar from the YouTube highlights and bits and pieces that have been out there. He looks a very similar stature at least to George Hurst rather than I haven't seen him play 90 minutes. I couldn't tell you if he's as quick or as mobile, etc. But he looks a similar build, a similar stature. But I'd be amazed if that's not the first port of call come January to just give him some help in some regard.
What a player, though, and what a season he's having. And yeah, like you say, we can see why. I think Joe Fares had him third in his Ipswich Town squad power rankings, and that's only going up, isn't it?
£1.5 million as well.
Crazy, isn't it, when you compare it to Ellis Sims last weekend, 3.5 up front, rising to 7. We got an absolute bargain there.
Is there a slight possibility that he rests him from the start on Tuesday night against Watford, or is he just going to have to just keep playing him from the start every single game?
He's going to have to play him, I think, until the Wimbledon FA Cup game, personally, because the level of the replacement kind of does, it doesn't nullify our attacking threat, but there is a noticeable big drop-off, and I don't think we can afford that at the moment with, you know, we've got ourselves in a very fortunate position, but we need to carry on, and yeah, he's going to have to continue manfully up front, I think, for the next 5-6 games, and then he'll get a weekend off for Wimbledon, and then we'll see what the transfer window brings. But he's absolutely crucial, and we can't afford to rest him and take him out of the team because of the drop off. It's, you know, in reality, it would be Scarlett that would start at Vicarage Road, probably ahead of Ladapo, given he's the one. I know Ladapo came on yesterday, but Scarlett was kind of the one who was trusted more with that role. But I just don't think he can do that at this point. I think he's too important.
Over the last 3 games, we've had the 3 different subs come on, because Jackson came on, didn't he, and played that role in the midweek game. Forgive me, I might have got it wrong, but I'm sure that Scarlett's done one, Jackson's done one, and now Ladapo's done one in terms of playing that replacement role. And obviously, they've all 3 of them have got 3 different sets of traits, good and bad, which are all different to George Hurst. You know, as we know, George Hurst is the more rounded of all of them. He's got green ticks in most of the boxes, whereas the other guys probably haven't. So yeah, very possibly they'll just manage his minutes a bit more in the upcoming games by taking him off the pitch earlier, but hopefully we're, you know, 4-0 up on Norwich by the time he goes off in the 55th minute. So you just give him a rest that way rather than having to slog the poor guy for 85 minutes.
And another Ipswich Town figure that we're unable to rest in this hectic Christmas schedule is Mr. Seb Brown, who's going to be back on Tuesday night for the live match reaction after the final whistle alongside Rich Woodward, as I'm at that one for a change on a Tuesday night. And then on Thursday, you're back again, Seb, for a live pre-match show looking ahead to the derby. Might be a brief cameo from someone representing that lot up the Rood. There may be more to share with Telegram too as an exclusive. And then next Sunday, East Anglian Derby flagship show live at the usual time. Hopefully this time next week, we'll have the whole team on talking about a destruction derby. That's easy for me to say. And excitingly, we're also doing a Christmas giveaway, Seb. We want to give away an Ipswich Town shirt or official ITFC merch of equivalent value to one lucky subscriber, but we need your help. We'll post the giveaway instructions tomorrow morning on our socials. Entry will be permitted on all platforms that we're across, except TikTok, requiring usual likes and follows, etc. But one of the criteria is that you subscribe to our YouTube channel. The more subs, the better the prize. So if we have 3.6 to 3,700 subscribers on YouTube by Christmas Eve, you'll win Telegram for the rest of the season. If we have 3.7 to 3.8, it's BM merch item of your choice. And if it's over 3,800, we'll give away the town shirt. And as I mentioned, the winner will be announced on Christmas Eve. So get involved and get your friends and family involved too. I'll be entering that because I still don't have a current Ipswich town shirt. I think I'm probably unlikely to win. But you've got to be in it to win it.
Yeah. I must say that the hoodie that was on that pop-up you just put on the screen, Mikey, is real top quality.
It's very
nice. And they do all sizes.
I'm repping the long-sleeve T-shirt tonight that matches up quite well with the current Ipswich third shirt. Get on bluemondayitfc.co.uk for all of the links to our social media, Telegram, and the merch store. They're all on there. Let's do a few more questions, shall we? Let's dip back into these comments. I'm going to go to Mauricio Reyes, who is one of our Telegram members and the brother of a cameraman that I worked with yesterday, who, for some unknown reason, is not an Ipswich Town fan. But good on you, Mauricio. He says he has the feeling that we win the next two and then Leeds away will be the free hit. We'll lose to Leeds and we'll hear about the 6 points league Leeds won off us for the rest of the season. Would you take that if given it, despite the latter part of that question?
Very much well, so. A 9-point week isn't
promoted.
Yeah, and a 9-point week isn't to be sniffed at all, is it? You know, if we can keep that buffer going to Elland Road, where the result won't really make a difference in terms of, you know, them the league positions, then yeah, absolutely, why not?
You can imagine getting to the end of the season. How many games we lost so far this season? Two, haven't we? Getting to the end of the season, having lost three games, and two of those games being against Leeds, and us getting promoted, and yet every comment under the promotion tweet will be, yeah, but who lost? Which team beat them those two out of those three times?
And we're assuming, obviously, that Leeds aren't going to drop points. Sunderland away on Wednesday night or Tuesday night is going to be tricky. Hopefully, they'll do us a favour like they did with West Brom at the weekend. You know, I kind of maybe thought Blackburn might do something, but Sunderland away is tough. So, hopefully, if we can pick up 3 points, and even if they drop two more, then that gap is slightly pushed further away again. And yeah, the trip up there won't be quite so daunting. You know, I kind of thought at the start of this run of fixtures, we might end up going to Elland Road with maybe a 4-5 point kind of gap between us. But if we can maintain the 7 when we go there, then it almost is a free hit, like Mauricio says.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Sunderland are interesting, actually, aren't they, in terms of the situation they are with poor old Mogger. They're sitting in sixth. It'd be really interesting to see who, you know, there'd be plenty of people wanting that job now, you know, seeing them sitting in sixth. But I think, as you guys said a couple of days ago, I think it may well be a name that some of us have maybe never even heard of.
The Football Manager guy from France is heavily linked, isn't he? Is it Will
Still?
That's the one. He's heavily linked, obviously, but yeah, they're going to go down the route, aren't they? It's a very young side, isn't it? It's a young sporting director. It's a young owner. They're going to do what we've all done and go and appoint a late 30s coaching manager, aren't they? And see what that gives them. It's harsh on Mowbray because, yeah, like you said, they are, you know, they're right on the tails of the playoffs, but this is the modern day, isn't it?
Will Still. Be another language for him to learn, won't it? Going up to Sunderland. Norman Greenwald, Chaplin's goal yesterday means he's one ahead of Broadhead now. Who will be our top scorer this season and how many will they get? I'm going to go for George Hurst, 17 goals.
That'd be a hell of a second half of the season. I think he's on about 4 or 5 of them, isn't he? So that would be incredible. Yeah. Chaplin, I guess, has to be the favourite given last season. What I like this year, though, is Chaplin's, I think that was his fifth assist yesterday, which, you know, I know he got the 26 goals last year, but I don't think his assists got to double figures or anything like that. So it's nice to see that kind of part of his game has moved on as well. I'll say Chaplin on the basis that he tends to score in streaks. Hopefully he can bag a couple more between now and Christmas and then Broad, when he kind of goes on one of his dry spells, then Broadhead can hit his form again and look to boost his numbers.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. So what's Chapman got? Eight now?
Eight.
So crucky. If he can not even double that, if he can get to 15 in a season in the Championship from the position that he plays, it's fantastic. And as everyone said about George Hurst,
no penalties.
If George Hurst ends up getting 17 goals this season on top of all the work that he does and, you know, his stature and his pace, and he's not going for anything less than about 40 million quid in the summer, is he?
Gary Haseman says Colby Bishop with 12 goals. I hope we don't have any Portland fans in the chat. I think he's injured at the moment anyway. So you're both going with Connor Chaplin then. Despite Broadhead going through this quiet spell and only being, what is it, one or two behind?
Yeah, I think our maybe our new multi-million pound record-breaking signing in January might sneak it.
Neil Wilmore says two players, Broadhead and Chappers, will be double figures for assists and goals. Brilliant to have all of these attacking players.
You could have three, couldn't you? If you could have Hurst in there as well, could potentially get into double figures for both as well. But it's just, we're not, as poor old commentary of found, we're not Coventry and Middlesbrough to a more extent, we're not reliant on one or two players to do everything for us, are we? You know, it's a pretty even split across that front three or four.
It is. I don't know why Romeo Fall's asking this, but who captains the side in the absence of Morsey, Evans and Walton?
Luongo, I would assume, probably.
Has Wolfenden done it?
I think he has, but does his personality lend it to a captaincy? Maybe. I think for me, if Luongo was playing, I'd have Luongo in the captaincy role personally. And yeah, maybe Burgess Chaplin. Chaplin. Yeah, he could get involved, can't he? He can be quite vocal at times. So I think for me, if Luongo's playing, he would be the captain.
Hopefully, we don't have to find out somehow. lots of comments in here about Leeds. Sam Jolly says this Leeds disrespect is just tasty fuel for our lot. It's thing is with Leeds, it's just an enormous fan base, isn't it? So there's going to be more annoying fans on social media than any other club in the Championship. There's some really great Leeds fans out there as well that think that we're doing a fantastic job and don't remind us. Actually, no, I think they all do remind us that they've beaten us this season, don't they? Pumpkin says he's expecting Davis to have 22 assists. I mean, that would be some going, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would and another 40 million quid's worth of player come the summer if he gets 22 assists from left back.
40 million quid, yeah, that'd be nice.
I think we're all in agreement that Leif Davis is our most saleable asset that we own and probably the most likely to go for big money this summer. Do you think George Hurst is maybe not far behind him now?
I think if he starts to add the goals that...
if he gets those 17 goals.
You're predicting, yeah. But even if not, but if he does start, you know, even if you think a dozen goals, 14 goals between the end of the season, it's just... And Kieran McKenna said it post-match last week. I'm sure it was Saturday as I drove home. There aren't many 6'3" strikers who can run like he runs, both from a speed perspective and an endurance perspective, as well as, you know, winning his aerial battles and winning the physical battle of holding off centre-halves, kicking at your calves for 86 minutes and sort of tying a team together and bringing other people into play. Crikey, if you're going to start adding goals into the mix as well, then yeah, you may all be right, Mike. And of course, he's English as well, which adds to something, doesn't it? So yeah, he's for £1.5 million, again, I'll say it again, it's just currently looking silly money.
Steve Catchpole, I'm going to go to you, Craig. I know you just answered the last one because you've experienced two promotions as a season ticket holder. No, three promotions as a season ticket holder. And I'm guessing it's just two for you, Seb.
Yeah, same as me. I'm not as long in the tooth as Craig.
I wasn't going to say anything.
This was the 90s, Craig. Guys. We're not talking about the 1890s. This is the 1990s.
Kind of. It's beginning to feel like a promotion season, says Steve Catchpole. Does it remind anyone else of other such seasons? It's a little bit better than the long ball of the early 90s, isn't it, Craig?
Depends who the long ball's being aimed towards, Mikey. I think what we've found, certainly in those three seasons, was it's around about this time of year that things start to feel like promotion season. I think when I spoke to Jason Dazelle about it, he said it was the game against Blackburn around Christmas that he and the team started thinking, do you know what? We've got a real chance here. That season, Blackburn were the other team that were in and around us, had a lot of money compared to us, and were the favourites to go up. So there's probably a couple more parallels there in terms of this season in the teams that are around us. So I think we'll probably get a more of an inkling once we've got through this batch of games and once we've played Norwich, Leeds and Leicester over the course of a week. That'll be the time to know whether we're sort of mirroring previous seasons and left it a little bit later last year, didn't we? Around about February time before we start getting on our roll. But I say the turn of the year seems to be the time when, you get the tingling to think that this could be one. I say I think the players will as well. Once they get the turn of that season, you start playing the teams again, then you start to get a feeling whether this is going to be another one.
Seb, just trying to keep enjoying the journey, right, and not worry too much about the P word.
Absolutely. I mean, this team, you know, the one good thing, you know, is no matter how excited we get as fans and how carried away we may all get in the chat forums on Twitter, McKenna will keep them all so grounded. You know, it's a cliche, but he will say one game at a time, and that's absolutely the right way to approach it. You know, we all thought last season was incredible, and this season's taking it to a whole new level, and these are the moments you have to enjoy as football fans. Christ, we had so many years of dross in the doldrums, didn't we? You know, rubbish football, rubbish results. There was no point in the club existing to a certain degree, because we never had any ambition and never tried anything for 15, 20 years. And to be sitting here on 48 points, you know, we could be on 50 points by the time we play Norwich, and that's insane. That is crazy. I think I saw, was it Statman tweeted on the weekend saying it's the best points tally from us ever with 20 league games under our belts, you know, and you compare some of the great sides we've had in the past. Well, this side is up there with them. It's brilliant. It's full of lovable characters. Everyone loves the manager, and you know, days like yesterday, if we can get a few more between now and the end of the season, it could be incredibly, incredibly special. Like I said, yesterday felt like a real statement. Gave me vibes of a couple of the away games last year, Bolton, Derby, before obviously the Peterborough and Barnsley ones at the end of the season. And if we can keep it going, then, you know, we will do well to mess it up, because we'll have such a high points tally. It would take a run of form that we've simply never experienced under McKenna for us to drop out of it. And yeah, you know, enjoy it, because at some point, I'm sure this will end. At some point, Kieran McKenna will go and manage a Champions League club. But for now, he's ours, and we simply enjoy it while we can, because this is what being football fans is all about.
Lovely, Seb. Difficult. Yeah, Craig is emotional over there in the middle. Sam Jolly says, plenty of us still remember that great 91-92 season, Craig. Don't let these kids bully you. All just a bit of fun, isn't it? And as part of the 100th anniversary of the Rotary Club of Ipswich, they're fundraising at the ITFC v Norwich game. The collection is for motor neuron disease, supporting the Derby Rimmer Foundation, which is also supported by Marcus Stewart. Collectors will be in the fan zone and outside the shop. Payment can be made by cash or card. Let's make the 16th of December 2023 a day to remember for more than one reason. I'm getting pumped for it now, Craig. How about you? Or are you just all eyes on Watford now?
Yeah, let's get Watford out of the way, and then we'll worry about that. Well, as everybody knows, the weekend doesn't start until Rich and Seb have, you know, started having a little slanging match against each other on a Thursday night.
Live on Thursday night, yeah.
Tune in, yeah. I'm not even thinking.
Yeah, Norwich is only another two podcasts away for Seb. So.
yeah.
Yeah, it's only another 6 hours of research for Seb. I'm fully focused on Watford, and then once we've got Watford out of the way, then we can actually enjoy looking forward to a derby.
Brilliant. Thanks everyone for the comments. Thanks for watching. Please hit like and subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already. And thanks to all the listeners as well. Roll on Watford on Tuesday night, and hopefully another 3 points, Seb.
Very much so. Yeah, bring it on.
It's the promotion running. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.